Hello and welcome to the Bookcast Club, a podcast for book lovers. I'm Jenny, coming to you from Norwich in the UK, and I am joined by a friend of the pod and author, Abigail Mann. Hello, Abby.
Hello, thank you.
How are you?
Yeah, good, thank you. Good. Brain frazzled, tired, writing, trying to raise a child, but you know, all of that.
We might both be complaining about our 14 and 18 month year old children keeping us awake, but we're trying to be upbeat and... and lively.
It asks for when we recorded, time of recording, but we'll do it.
I'm amazed we managed to make it here generally at the time we said we would. Abby, introduce yourself to us. I know you've been on the pod a few times, but tell any new listeners who you are and the books that you've written.
I have, and I think the first time I came on this was maybe even just before or just after my debut novel came out, which was almost 3 years ago.
Wow. I feel like I remember you maybe announcing that you'd got an agent.
I think it might have been that long ago. It was definitely one of, if not the very first podcast I ever came on. So yes, yeah, since then. So I had my first novel, The Lonely Fajita, came out then in 2021, and then I have written and published two more since then with HarperCollins. My books are in that genre, which isn't really a genre, which is kind of I would describe it as kind of contemporary comic, probably if it was in the States, new adult fiction. So something that is usually featuring a protagonist of around 30 years old, give or take 5 years, and they usually people describe them as wholesome comic, but also, you know, touching and dealing with some darker themes as well. And I've almost done the fourth one, the never-ending story, as I'm calling it. So yes, the second one was The Sister Surprise, and then I had The Wedding Crasher, and then this one is called The Great 30th Trip, and it was meant to come out already, but had a baby, and turns out that they are not necessarily conducive to writing at speed of any length, so that one is coming out next year. It will come out next year. I mean, I still haven't finished it, but I will be coming out next year one way or another.
How exciting. Yeah, I love your books. They're very wholesome and heartwarming, but not so light and fluffy that I don't feel challenged. Do you know what I mean?
I know what I mean.
You write them. So yeah, go read Abby's books. But the reason I've got Abby on is to chat unlikable female narrators / characters. I think mainly narrators. We want to talk about complicated women, I think. And mm-hmm. I feel like your main characters are generally quite complex, not unlikable, but complex.
Oh, it depends who you ask for, yeah.
I don't think any of them are that unlikable. But yeah, complex and not perfect, which is, I'd say, quite different sometimes to some books within perhaps the same genre that you write in. I think I like that you write complex female characters.
That's always the aim, I think, is to write characters who I'm not making necessarily complex for the sake of them being complex, but just in that perhaps the flaws that I give them are not always like palatable flaws. Mm. I would say just because the spread of people that I know flaws of my own are not always soft around the edges, you know, quite sharp sometimes. And that is what I try and communicate, I suppose, with my main characters. And it's, you know, usually as a result of things that they have experienced, their perspectives on the world. Sometimes they can be a little bit annoying. I mean, you know, I can be a little bit annoying. So I try and kind of capture what I see anyway as the reality and the nuance of women. All my protagonists are women. So that does tend to be what I try and achieve, and you know, it means that a lot of people find them endearing, a lot of people like them, some people don't, and that's the nature of humankind generally. So I don't necessarily see any kind of reception towards characters that I write as good, bad, or indifferent. They just are representative, I guess, of how I view friends of mine, myself, people generally.
Realistic. To things important. I think, well, I know the books that I'm going to talk about later. I suggest maybe they're not that realistic. But, you know, we'll go there in a little while. But are you, or have you currently read anything you'd like to share with listeners?
Yeah, so they're both books that I'm currently reading, and I'm both 50% of the way through them. I'm reading one and I'm listening to another. I would say that overwhelmingly 3/4 of the books that I'm reading at the minute are audiobooks, because hands-free, can do it, nursing a baby. So audiobooks have been my thing recently. One is The Bee Sting by Paul Murray. It is a hefty tome. It is 656 pages long.
Was it on the Booker?
It was, and I didn't realise this until recently. It was shortlisted, I believe, for the Booker. I think it also equates to about 25 hours of listening.
Cool.
I think I was drawn to it because it is described as a kind of an epic novel, all based around kind of family drama that can be traced back to a seemingly inconsequential bee sting, quite literally, and then everything that is kind of happened as a result of that. I guess you'd describe it as the butterfly effect. So it's very, sits in moments and sits in, I suppose, time periods for quite long periods of time. You've got, you know, 100 pages of one character, you might have another 70 pages with a different character, and I'm absolutely loving it. It is really good. It's all set in Ireland, rural Ireland, and it's just, yeah, I feel like I've got a whole encyclopedia of like family gossip and drama just spinning around my head all the time because of this book. And a very effective depiction of the power that a matriarch wields within a family, when the only control and power they have comes from essentially their social skills, their influence, the quiet influence that they have over usually sort of the men in their life. And which I've never seen it done so effectively. Also written by a man, so
interesting.
Yeah, very good.
Yeah, I don't know how I've avoided knowing what that book was about. I think perhaps we didn't do a Booker episode last year, because normally Sarah will definitely cover the Booker and I tend to know all about them. But yeah, I had no idea about that one. I always find, like, God, my mother-in-law doesn't listen to this, but I just always find that relationship between sons and their mothers absolutely fascinating. And I do wonder now that I have a little boy whether I'll be the same when I'm older. Yeah, that is a very interesting dynamic when the mother kind of rules the roost, but quite quietly. Giving away a lot about my own mother-in-law now.
And also how much they are propping up the whole organization. And I mean that in the sense of, like, this is about a family, but it's also about a business, a family business, and all of the threads that extend from that in terms of, like, social influence within, like, a small rural community that is all just propped up by the efforts that are completely overlooked by everybody, I guess, and unacknowledged, of like one woman, which is really, really interesting. But on paper, I mean, it sounds like super boring. It's like, oh, there's a failing garage, like car mechanics business, and the once wealthy family are now having to like sell their jewelry on eBay to get by. And it's like, okay, yawn first, where's the story? But it's just full. Every page is just full of story. And there's one line that I think is one of the best descriptions of a person I have ever read. I think someone was described as a nicotine-stained egg, like waddling on two sticks. And I was just like, that is just fantastic. How funny.
A nicotine stained egg. I love that. I don't even want to read that, even though it's massive, and that's probably what's put me off in the first place. But yeah, you've sold it to me. I am reading I don't know if you've seen this book. I'm going to hold it up because of the cover's really beautiful. I'm reading a book called Mother Thing by Ainsley Hogarth. Now, it's got a picture of a lady on the front who... Is it the Munsters? Was it called the Munsters? Is that like a...
Yes.
I've never seen it, but I feel like that looks like the mother from the Munsters.
Big kind of a white melon streak running down the front.
Sort of yes, thing. Even though you can't really see her hair. But yeah, that's kind of the vibe you get from the front. And I've seen people review it a long time ago, so I'd forgotten what it was about. But I've only just started about 3 chapters in, and it's opened with a couple who are called Abby and Ralph, who live with Ralph's mother, who they've just found dead in the house, and she's taken her own life. And I then went to read the blurb because we were going to talk about it, and I'd completely forgotten what this book was about, but it mentions ghosts. And I think Laura, who is the mother / mother-in-law, is going to come back, and whether this is metaphorically or actually as a ghost, and haunt both Ralph and Abby in very different ways, which makes me think it's going to be slightly metaphorical. But if you go on and read some of the kind of, is it called blurbs? What's it called when authors write little snippets on the back? What's that called?
Quotes.
Quotes, yeah. Yeah, when they've got authors to like big it up.
Yeah.
I want to call that blurbing as well. It's not blurbing though, is it? Anyway, from what they've written on the back, I'm actually starting to think it is going to be real ghosties. I don't know. But the blurb gives quite a lot, not a lot away, but it gives a lot more background, because I think it's all going to be kind of out of order, because we've started with the mother-in-law dying, but I think it's going to turn out that her and Abby had a rather terrible relationship, which was a really difficult woman to live with. Funny that, talking about mother-in-laws. But Abby also works in a care home where she has a favourite resident, and I think maybe the daughter is about to like pull this resident out of the care home, so I think she's going through like a period of like losing her favourite resident that she works with, losing her husband to depression, and dealing with this ghost all at the same time. And they've made comparisons to Rachel Yoder's Night Bitch, which I did enjoy, which is a very bizarre book. And actually, from the 3 chapters I've read, this is quite strange as well. I'm having to concentrate quite hard, which this is where I'll moan about the 18-month-old reading a physical book before you go to bed, that you need to tune into quite well, is quite difficult. So it's a chapter a night at most at the moment. So yeah, that is my current read.
I feel like books, sometimes when you're reading them a chapter a night, there are some kinds of books that just do not work with that approach, and you have to read either like 100 words to start with and then you can go chapter by chapter.
Yeah.
Or it just falls out of your ear into your pillow whilst you sleep and you wake up like, I don't know if I'm not liking the story because I'm just not reading it right.
yeah, not good. It feels like a book you need to read in like big chunks, but we'll see. And it is quite timely talking about it, like unlikable characters, because one of the things she's done in like the first opening chapter is they've obviously found the mother dead on the floor, and when the husband's gone out the room, she's like slipped her ring off her finger and like pocketed it.
Ooh.
So yeah, intriguing.
Yes, I'm really interested to hear how you find that one. I have heard mixed things about it.
Interesting. The style of it and the blurb, it should be something I enjoy, but we'll see. It might just be too much like hard work.
Mm-hmm.
I'll report back.
So I, in a completely different genre, I like reading if I'm reading 2 books at the same time, I quite like them to be totally different genres. So I am reading You Could Be So Pretty by Holly Bourne, which is a YA dystopian novel, which is based in a world where, in fact, it's a reflection of this current world, this current kind of, I suppose, Western society. But the names of things have been given, I suppose, generalized terms. So, for example, the conventionally attractive girls at school are called like the pretties. The older women are called invisibles. Makeup is not called makeup, it's called putting on a mask, that kind of thing. So it uses a lot of coined sort of terms like that to really explore societal attitudes towards beauty, I guess, and worth, beauty and self-worth and value, and how young people, women especially, are living within this system but convinced that actually it's a choice the whole time. So it's really kind of exploring the idea of like, how much of a choice do people have, specifically women, over things like their career and their appearance and their value? Or is it just a very carefully constructed sort of doctrine that people are living underneath? And so there's like a split, two main characters, in a split point of view, so alternating chapters. One of them is a pretty and one of them is objectional. One is an objectional and one is a pretty, and they are kind of pulled together as a result of an incident that happens to one of them. That's I'm halfway through, so we will see whether the pretty is awakened, I think, woken up. That's the phrase I think that's used. I'm really enjoying it. I always find YA quite hard to get into because I don't read it.
Yeah, for fun. No, I don't read it very often.
No, but it's actually really powerful. I have found it a very heavy-handed read, but now, because the terms are so interchangeably used and so frequent, like every time I'm spent sort of like 5 minutes in the morning putting a bit of makeup on, I'm like, if I added up all of these 5 minutes I have spent doing that, mm-hmm, over the course of my lifetime, I wonder if I'd have a PhD by now, you know, that kind of thing. So it's incredibly effective, I think, about sort of challenging some of these values that you unquestionably take on. And I think that it's a super important read for young girls to have. Like, I think if every 13-year-old could read this book, there would be a big tidal wave of sort of shift. Hopefully there would be. But I mean, if it's impacted me and I'm an adult, I'd like to think it would do the same to an even more impressionable age group. That's my other current read. I'm really, really enjoying.
I was going to say, it sounds like something fairly important and profound for teenagers to be reading. I'm glad she's a popular author. That means that they probably are, which is good.
Yes. Yeah, I would like to think so anyway. And I think Holly does a lot of school visits and talks and is super engaged with her readers. So I like to think that this is doing sort of like a Trojan horse self-esteem revamp job on a lot of young people.
This is where we pop a little ad break in to tell you about all the different ways you can support the pod, most of which are totally free. We'll start with Patreon, as this is where we've been hiding over the last few months. Tiers start at £2 a month, with our bonus episode tier costing just £5. Now that we're seasonal and generally recording ahead of time, Patreon is where you will find all our timely conversations on recent and current reads, DNFs, book prizes, and loads more. You can try our bonus tier for free today. We highly encourage a binge listen to our back catalogue of bonus episodes, and we will take no offence if you choose to cancel afterwards. If you love receiving book mail and personalised recommendations, our top tier is for you. We get you to fill in a survey and then we tailor our book recommendations to your preferences. find all the details in our show notes. Now for the free ways to support us that make a huge difference. A really effective and easy way of showing your support is by rating and reviewing us on Apple Podcasts. There is a link in the show notes that will take you straight to the Apple Podcast page where you can write, hopefully, a 5-star review. If you listen on Spotify, you can also very easily give us a star rating. You can also share our posts on social media. We're at Bookcast Club on Instagram and TikTok. You can sign up to our newsletter on Substack, where we share even more book recommendations, our pick of the new releases, and all the latest podcast news. But the best way for us to find new listeners is by you telling your book loving friends and family about us. However you choose to show your support, we, as always, want to say a huge thank you. We appreciate each and every one of our listeners. So, moving on to our main topic of conversation, which is unlikable female characters. Now, I love an unlikable female character, and I'm really intrigued to talk to you about why that might be, because as I was prepping for this episode, I'm sitting there thinking, why is it that I'm so drawn to them? And I've got some theories, but I can't quite put my finger on why, because some of the books I'm going to talk about, like, they're really unlikable. Some of them don't actually have any redeeming qualities. So what is it that draws people to really quite unlikable female characters? I guess not even just people who have flaws like we were talking about earlier, but like genuinely do unlikable things, like abhorrent things. Why is it that we like them?
It's a good question that I think the deeper you dig down, I think the more it, I think, tells you about not just you as a reader and your attitude towards the depiction of females in books, but also how you make judgment calls on, I think, females at large generally who are not in your immediate circle, perhaps. I think that one of the key differences between you, for instance, having a wild friend who has done some crazy things or some really awful things, and yet you still kind of like welcome them back into your life and you can accept, you know, oh, that crazy time in your 20s where you like got off with my boyfriend, but you know, we're all adults now. And you would, perhaps you would forgive somebody in that situation. But as soon as you come across a character like that, it's like, don't get on, don't like them. And it can almost taint your view of the whole book. And I think it's because if you have a main character, like a protagonist who does some pretty dark things or has a perspective which is a little subversive, should we say, because you are in their head the whole time and you're seeing the thinking process and the experiences and the perspectives that have led up to perhaps some of these actions that they take place in the book, it's almost like we fall victim to understanding too much about them and having sort of like a moral judgment call on what it is that they're doing. Whereas I always find that if there's like a side character, like a best friend, for example, who is the wild one instead, you very rarely get switched off of a book because of a side character being unlikable. I mean, I tend to write quite unlikable side characters because I really enjoy a verbal spar between a protagonist and a side character. And I tend to give more over the top personality traits to side characters, but I would really hold back from doing that to a protagonist.
Yeah,
I don't know why we're so drawn to. I think it's because I tend to be a risk averse person. I will consider the consequences of something far more than is necessary.
Oh my god,
before I do it. So when I read a character who doesn't do those things, or I'm just like, you see these situations play out, I'm just thinking of like, I didn't include them, and maybe I should have. The protagonist in Cleopatra and Frankenstein, I don't know if you've spoken about that book before.
No, I've not read it. I know the book you're talking about, though. I can picture the cover now.
Because when I was coming up with books to talk about on this, I was thinking of unlikable female characters that I have read, but I actually love the book.
Mm-hmm.
But that one I found more challenging. It's a really, really popular book, Cleopatra and Frankenstein.
Yes.
But there are some things that character does that I'm just like, I cannot relate to the way things have played out,
mm.
or the way that they have gone about certain things. And the ones that I have included in this list, I can perhaps understand more. And perhaps that's the difference, is that a lot of people maybe are switched off. The people who don't like unlikable characters, female characters in books, are ones who like are switched off by that kind of behavior because they can't relate to it.
I think the reason that I like unlikable characters is because, like you said, it's either that they're doing things that you kind of admire them for that you wouldn't dare do yourself, or they do things that you see reflected in your own personality. Oh god, there's a book that I read, I'm gonna have to look it up. This it'll sound coherent when I edit this together. Yeah, Everyone in This Room Will Someday Be Dead by Emily Austin. And yeah. I really like the main protagonist in that. She's very neurotic and she is constantly worrying about dying, which I relate to quite well. I think it's equal parts admiration and equal parts acceptance, I think. Which is why I still then struggle to understand why I then like really unlikable characters. Like their actions are just abhorrent. And you saying that the books that you choose to write, your side characters tend to be the ones with like the more questionable character traits, has made me realize how difficult it must be to write a whole book where your protagonist is really unlikable. I guess you're always going to get Marmite opinion in that case as to whether people enjoy your books or whether they don't. But maybe that's the case whatever you write, that some people are going to like it and some people don't, and you just go for it if you've got this character in your head that you really want to see kind of played out. Shall we go on to talk about the books that we've listed? We've got a few each.
I think I'll start with Idol by Louise O'Neill. Have you read that one?
I have heard of it.
You recognise the cover, I expect.
Yes, I do recognise the cover.
The reason why I have chosen this one, so the main character is called Samantha Miller and is a influencer. And I find books, I think I read a spate of maybe two or three books in which the main character was somehow like a public figure. I'm thinking of Pretending by Holly Bourne. Now this Idol is like Pretending in that it features somebody who's really kind of like at the peak of their career, who is very much kind of framed as a self-made hashtag girl boss, which I believe is like a dead phrase now from the previous decade. And it's like the new age version of like, you can have it all. The downfall is, in this instance, like a huge downfall in that to really pivot her career, I guess, from into the mainstream, this main character, Sam, writes a piece about a formative sexual experience that she had as a teenager with her best friend, and how that helped her understand so much about her sense of like liberation and her sexuality. But then her agent is contacted by that friend who doesn't remember that sexual experience in the same way, and then everything kind of unravels from that point. And Sam is like the definition of an unreliable narrator. And we see them communicating one thing via socials and then living a very different version of that life. and just desperately trying to grapple to this narrative that she has carefully constructed about herself. It reminded me a little bit of, I don't know if you were ever into or followed like the Caroline Calloway on Instagram years ago.
Oh, I don't know.
Okay, you would love it. And there is a excellent Sentimental Garbage episode all about Caroline Calloway, and I believe the you can still find the posts. And it's essentially a exaggerated, semi-fictionalized account of somebody's move to like the University of Cambridge from America, very kind of like fairy tale like story. And this is like the real kind of Caroline Calloway is a real person, and it turns out that like she was basically kind of like paying a friend to write all of her posts and construct this kind of story around herself. Amazing. Side note, she also got like a massive book deal.
Wow.
Spent all the money and then never wrote the book.
Oh my god, how'd you get away with that?
I know.
Maybe you don't get away with it.
One could only dream. And yeah, Idol is kind of that. I suppose if you were to distill it down into what it's actually doing as a story, which I always do because I kind of cannot read books now without thinking about how the plot is constructed, which is just one of the downsides, I think, of writing books as part of your job. What essentially it is a kind of riches to rags story. And there's a sense of voyeurism that comes in where you're just watching somebody who seemingly has everything, like a very empowered, successful female businesswoman who's very, very well guarded and who her whole thing is to like amplify and empower women, and she'll have like hundreds of women coming to like talks that she does. The opening chapter is one of the best opening chapters I think I have read that captures that kind of mass hysteria almost that comes through wellness influences, and you just see it all unraveling throughout the course of the book, and her just desperately trying to clutch onto the threads of whatever sort of reputation that she had left, and at the cost of anything. And I just enjoyed the ride completely. But not everyone, I think, I think some people might look at a character like that and be like, the decisions they've made are so awful. And I'm like, yeah, but like, one, it's fiction, right? But two, that's part of the appeal, is that you're just, I think by reading something, it doesn't mean to say that you're like condoning anything that happens. You're there to be entertained, and I was entertained.
Does she have any redeemable qualities, or is she very much supposed to be disliked and everybody loves watching her downfall? Like, do you enjoy her downfall in the book?
I would say that there are very few redeemable qualities, because what's really interesting is that because it's written from her point of view, I think it's first person point of view, you don't necessarily see the ulterior motives behind some of the things that she does, because she's not conscious of it herself. So for example, you know, if she's like taking around a housewarming gift to someone, because it's written from her perspective, she really does genuinely think that doing something like that is a neighborly thing to do. She's showing someone that she's kind of perhaps repairing a bit of a damaged relationship from the past. But then when you get more information, you then in hindsight are looking at that action and thinking, oh my God, I cannot believe that she thought that that was okay. Or, oh my God, that's so sinister to have done that. And so it's very kind of very compelling writing that just keeps ramping up and ramping up. But yeah, very little that's redeemable, other than some backstory that you get between her and I believe some like family. I can't quite remember exactly, but there is something that I think that's the difference. It helps you understand what they have done and why they have done it, but it doesn't make it better. it just helps you understand it. So yeah, there's very little that's redeeming about her as a character, but you do get to the end and think, I kind of get why she was like that, but it doesn't mean that she's any better of a person. But I do understand the character, and I think that's a sign of perhaps like a really well written type book, where you get to the end thinking, oh my gosh, they were absolutely awful. There's nothing redeeming about them, but I get why they did it.
Yeah, I guess it's yeah, the more we talk about this, the more I'm thinking, more maybe I'm understanding why I do like stories like this. I think it teaches us a lot about ourselves. And you talking about, I mean, if you spent any time on Instagram more than the average person, you do come across this kind of influencer drama where somebody seemingly is this like amazing person that can do no wrong, and then you'll find out that they've done something entirely shitty behind the scenes and it all unravels. You know, I've seen it happen online, and I guess it is interesting to like step back and reflect on why that might be and why people react in a certain way. And I guess that's what these books are doing, like in a fictional way, and it's making you assess like what you really think about people and their actions. Yeah, and I love that. Yeah, it's that kind of like darker side of humanity, I suppose.
And how quickly your opinion on someone can flip.
Yeah.
If a certain piece of information is revealed, or you find out something, you're just like, wow, I completely see them in a different light now. And I think that can work in reverse, right? Like when you've got a character who's actively presented to you in a negative way, and then the story reveals something about their past where you're just like, oh, I thought they were completely awful, but actually, you know, it's like the Severus Snape effect.
My first book, I've definitely talked about this book before on here, is Animals by Emma Jane Unsworth, which is about two unlikable female characters, Tyler and Laura, who are 30-somethings, very close friends, but it's very much like a party-fueled friendship. They're both in dead-end jobs, and they live for the weekends and drinking and taking drugs. But Laura has a boyfriend who I think maybe becomes her fiance like during the book. He's a fiance anyway at some point in there. He's very sensible. He's a musician. I think he's a pianist. He's teetotal. And the book kind of focuses on Laura and Tyler's friend, like the breakdown of a friendship. And it's really interesting to watch, to see Laura struggle with this sort of, I don't know, this part of her life that you can imagine happening in your 20s, and then this like grown up part of your life happening, and she's like stuck in between the two. But neither of them are likable in that book, and they must have redeeming qualities, but I don't remember them. I just remember them both being kind of awful. They're awful to each other. They're awful when they're out together. They're like awful the next day. She's awful to her boyfriend. But I really enjoyed it. And again, I think it's that thing of like assessing your own opinions on things and watching Laura struggle with this life that she used to have, where she's this party animal, to like, I'm doing it in quotation marks, like this grown-up life. What is it in society that makes you think behaving that way in your 20s is acceptable, but not when you get to like your 30s or your mid-30s? Why is it then that actually behaving that way is embarrassing? And this is what you see Laura struggle with, is that boundary between, when does it become embarrassing to behave like that? When you've got a friend who's the same age as you, who's always been your friend, is doing the same things that you've always done together. Yeah, I think it really makes you take a look at that. And I don't know. I don't have the answer to that. But I remember, distinctly remember, suddenly becoming very embarrassed about how I've behaved on a night out, whereas I never had those worries when I was in my 20s. But yeah, it's a good one. But neither of them are likeable throughout the entire thing. Yet it's still a really good book, and I think it's just written really well. And even though you don't like them, you can't take your eyes off them and off their antics. Have you read this one? I feel like you've read it before.
I have.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like I've even spoken about it.
I feel like we might have talked about it before.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I think it's that the behaviours that they exhibit, so like a real recklessness, perhaps a lack of consideration for kind of basically anyone outside of their pairing of them as best friends, you kind of grow to understand it as a symptom of somebody who is looking for an enabler, right? Like, who isn't wanting to change, who is wanting to reassurance that they are not coasting through life or failing in any sense. And when someone, and basically, I guess the story is like what happens when someone chooses to break away from that pattern and how much resistance and friction is there as a result of that. And I think that as a core feeling is something that's quite relatable. But it's a more extreme end of the spectrum. I mean, everyone I think has had another person who feels like a real kindred spirit and probably has either enabled or encouraged you to behave in ways that don't feel great. And that dynamic is exploring. So I think that's why you just can't, as you say, you just can't tear your eyes away from them.
Yeah. Yeah, it's brilliant. It's and the film is very, very good as well.
I still haven't seen it.
It's a great adaptation of it. Definitely worth a watch.
So my next one is Sunset by Jessie Cave. And I've chosen this one because I think it is quite a juxtaposition of a book, if I can use a GCSE English term that I'm sure everyone is fond of. You have got two sisters, one of which quite suddenly and really like haltingly and tragically dies. It's not a spoiler, it's the whole premise of the book. And her sister takes kind of, I suppose, the course of the rest of the book is her sister, who she's incredibly close with, dealing with the aftermath of that death. And it is, I suppose, at its core, it's a book that explores grief and what you do with that grief, especially when it's something that is just like absolute unexpected rug pulled from underneath your feet, and what that does to your memories of that person as well. And why I think it's relevant in like this conversation about unlikable characters is that the things that I think that this main character does, the sister Ruth, so Ruth is the one who survives her older sister Hannah, doesn't deal with the death in a way that I think anybody would consider to be conventional perhaps, but also palatable in a lot of ways. Now, I won't go into a huge amount of detail because spoilers, but essentially very little happens in the book. Apart from the first accident involving the death, kind of nothing happens throughout the rest of the book, apart from everything happens internally for this character, where they have just completely had a 180 flip and is having to not even just deal with the emotional fallout of their best friend and older sister dying, but also logistically having to figure it out as well. Like, what do you do with all this person's things? What do you do when you've got to like hire a lockup to put all of their furniture and possessions in? And there are just some like heartbreaking moments of kind of rearranging this furniture in this lockup as if it was still in the flat that she occupied, and the dynamic between Ruth, the sister who survives, and the boyfriend of her older sister, who is now obviously grieving as well, and what that dynamic is like between the two of them, who are just trying to sort of like muddle through this thing together. But the reason why I really, really enjoyed this as a book is that it's a grief that's explored where it's not reactionary, in terms of Ruth doesn't go out crazy partying, I'm just going to numb my feelings by doing X, Y, Z, which I think we have seen quite a lot in like books and films and things. But it's just absolutely mile a minute thought process. And I found that to be like quite relatable, where it's like, from an outside perspective, you might look at someone and be like, there's not really much going on there. She works in Costa in Heathrow Airport, doesn't have really any friends, very small circle, doesn't have any hobbies. And yet internally, there's just a constant stream of thoughts, observations, speculating about the person sitting next to her on the tube in a way that is kind of unhealthily intrusive, and yet no words are actually sort of spoken to that person. And I thought it was a really interesting depiction of sort of somebody's mental state, where from the outside actually not a huge amount is happening, but everything is going on, and how that spills over, and when it spills over, and who that impacts. So yeah, unlikable character in the sense that there are a couple of very particular things that she does where you're just like, you did what? But because you are in their head, almost exhaustingly hearing those thoughts as they come, again, I suppose it goes back to what I was saying earlier, you can understand it, but you can't necessarily sympathize with some of the things that happen. And so I found it just sort of like a very compelling read for that reason.
My next one, I don't know if I dare recommend it, but I'm going to, is Tamper by Alyssa Nutting. Have you
I'm
read
so
this?
I'm so glad you have brought this one up. I read this because it was your book club.
Right, so this, me and Alice have talked about this book on the podcast before, and I think we read this about 10 years ago.
Yeah.
When we were all in the same book club. So Tamper is the story of a middle school teacher, Celeste Price, who's 26 years old and has deliberately manufactured a life and career that places her with 14-year-old boys. And she strikes up a relationship with a pupil, a sexual relationship with a pupil. And I won't go into lots of detail about the plot, but she essentially then also has a relationship with the father in order to like get more access to this child. And eventually it's all found out. She's arrested and we follow the trial, her trial as well, where the sort of 10 years ago, I'd say, I don't really know if attitudes have changed now, but very much so at the time, if it was an adult female having relationships with young boys, it was, I don't know, women were kind of getting away with it and not going to prison for as long as men would, because I don't know, the boys were lucky, or you know, but the woman's so attractive, and there was this whole like narrative around females kind of being arrested and prosecuted for this sort of thing that just did not tally up with if it had happened to a male. And that's why Alyssa Nutting wrote this book to kind of go into that, into more detail, and why is it that society takes it easier on predatory women than it does men. And this book is, so the main character is like equally appalling as she is fascinating. And I was saying to Abby before we started recording this, I wrote a really long review for this 10 years ago on Goodreads. Well done, past me. But I even quoted a Guardian article that she had written. So I'm just going to read this. So this is taken from an article that she wrote in The Guardian. So Nutting believes that the reporting on or talk around real life cases often diminishes the serious nature of what's happened. Instead of talking about what she did, we talk about theories as to why she did it, or reasoning that she is not fully responsible for her behaviour, or that the boy's lucky. Here, she says to readers, read it in extreme graphic detail and see if you feel the same way. And this book is incredibly graphic in its sexual nature, like she doesn't leave anything off the page. So I would say, if you're going to struggle with reading that, then maybe don't start. At the time I wrote that, it is the most graphic book I've ever read. I don't know if that would be the case now. Hard to say. But it is fascinating. It is appalling, yet completely compelling at the same time. That you literally can't, again, take your eyes off it. And you'll feel equally grubby, yet can't put it down. So you want a book that's going to kind of make you question your own morals. I don't know. Go for it. But yeah, it's very, very good. But difficult.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't remember why we chose it for book club, but we did.
Oh, I think it's because it has one of the, at the time, greatest covers I have ever seen.
Oh, yeah. The cover's fantastic.
The cover is amazing. And I just don't even think we should describe it. I just think people should look it up.
No, I feel like it was changed when it was released.
Like, why would you change it? It was perfection.
Yeah, I definitely had the very good version, and then they definitely brought out a different version, which wasn't as suggestive, shall we say.
Yeah, that's the word for it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh dear. Right. Moving on. So to wrap things up, I have got a non-fiction book, which is where the idea from this episode came from, because it's called Unlikable Female Characters by Anna Bogutskaya, I think you say her surname. Now, she's a film critic who I have, prior to reading her book, heard her on various film podcasts that I listen to. And she brought out this non-fiction book last year where she basically traces the history and like evolution of unlikable female characters in film and TV. And the way she sections up the book is into the like different archetypes that you can have. It's like bitches, the shrew, the crazy woman, the train wreck. And that's how she approaches it. I really enjoyed it. I'd say that if you haven't watched loads of like film and TV, then she definitely will spoil stuff. So I have actually watched a lot of most of the films she talks about, most of the TV she talks about. So she, for example, she discusses Samantha Jones in Sex and the City, Regina George, Mean Girls. She talks about The Girl on the Train and Gone Girl, which obviously were books first, as was Sex and the City, but I'm not sure that the book's supposed to be that good, so we'll scrap that one. But yeah, it's just a really kind of interesting deep dive into unlikable female characters on film. And so I'm going to end it there with that non-fiction recommendation, with the caveat that if you've not seen a lot of the films she talks about, she very much spoils them. So if you've not seen Gone Girl, you've not seen The Girl on the Train, watch them first or read the books first if you don't want them spoiled. But yeah, it's a good nonfiction recommendation to end on.
Sounds good. I'm going to pick that up.
And then I had a few honourable mentions. So, like, obviously there's a few classics where the narrators or protagonists are not very likeable. So, Wuthering Heights and Pride and Prejudice. Obviously, even back in the day, people were writing unlikable female characters.
True.
Misery is another one, and by Stephen King. And another one where I have seen the film, but I've not read the book it was based on, is Can You Ever Forgive Me? Which has, what's her name? Melissa McCarthy in, who's very unlikable, but a completely compelling character who forges, it must be author signatures, like celebrity signatures, and sells them to I don't know who trades in celebrity signatures, but anyway, she forges them and then sells them. That's what she gets involved in, and she gets her friend kind of wrapped up into it as well. And it's not a spoiler because it's true real life. She was arrested for it, but then obviously brought him down as well, who is a side character who is decidedly more likable than she is as a main character. So that's kind of the flip of what we were talking about. So yeah, those are my sort of honourable mentions as well.
Oh, I've got a couple of them. I've got the protagonist in How to Kill Your Family, which I'm sure has been spoken about.
I've not read that one.
Yes, very, very much a fan of that book. And again, I think it comes from a really compelling sort of understandable backstory that helps explain the horrific actions that the character does as they progress through the story. And then I had as well Lex Crouch's debut, Reputation, has a main character who has some, for, you know, if you take an older teenager, I mean, I don't like to, if someone characterized my core traits as a 18, 19 year old, probably wouldn't love that depiction of myself, but that's what I think Lex does so well in their books, is really taking a protagonist and an unfiltered version of that person, and having them go through the story. So that one is a contemporary Regency novel, where we see sort of a heroine disappearing from her sort of family to take on a more affluent life than perhaps they have experienced before, and with that many liberties at the same time. So that's a really fun read if you like a kind of contemporary take on Regency.
Cool, thank you, that was fun.
Yay.
Where can people find you, Abby, if they would like to?
I am on Instagram sometimes, most frequently at Abigail E. Mann Author is my handle there. And I also write a Substack every week called Not a Write Off. Write spelt WRITE. It's a fun pun. and that's where I am, I suppose, mostly as well.
Cool. I will make sure to put all your links in the show notes. But thank you very much for coming on and chatting unlikable women with me.
Oh, my pleasure. It's one of my favorite topics.
If you would like to get in touch with the podcast, you can do so by either email, thebookcastclub@outlook.com, or we are on Instagram and TikTok. We're at bookcastclub. You can sign up to our Substack for more reviews, new releases, podcast recommendations, and updates on the pod. And you can obviously check out our Patreon, where you can get a 7-day free trial of our bonus episode tier. But thank you for listening. Thank you, Abby, for joining me. And we'll be back soon. Bye.